Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Economist. I grew up on America's East Coast, but the first job I got after college was out west. So I put pins in a map to plot out an American classic, the cross-country road trip. And as a kid who'd grown up with the X-Files, obviously I had to pass through Roswell, New Mexico. Not because I believed the stories that an alien craft had crashed there in the 50s, or that the government was guarding the little green men that were inside. I went for the kitsch, and Roswell delivered. You know who else is skeptical of the conspiracy theories? My colleague Michelle Hennessy. But when a story about UFOs came across her desk, she couldn't help but go on the hunt for answers. I'm Jason Palmer, and you're listening to The Weekend Intelligence. The people that think about unidentified flying objects at all tend to have strong feelings of belief or of skepticism. Rarely does someone take the straight-down-the-line position of being open to being persuaded. In today's episode, Michelle sits down with A, the anonymous boss of Enigma Labs. It's a tech startup whose central mission is to change the conversation about what's taking place in the skies.
I do think culturally, this is a really important time as well for what we're doing. It's really in the zeitgeist. It's in the water. I think we're living in an uncertain time.
Their hope? To step away from the science fiction and towards reality. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Jason.
Why don't we start with you telling me where you're based?
I'm based in our New York office.
Okay, and what is your job title?
Yeah, so I'm the graphic detail editor at The Economist, and the graphic detail section, it's basically our home for visual storytelling and data visualizations, right? So all things data, charts, maps, and so on come across my desk, usually on topics like war and economics and politics. But recently, quite a different kind of pitch came across my desk.
Go on.
So it was a Friday afternoon, I think, and our colleague from the science section looped me in on this long email thread, a discussion that he was having with a company. And I'm scrolling through, you know how it is, trying to get to the bottom of what it is that's being discussed. And I see that this is a story about UFOs. Now, perhaps I shouldn't admit to this, but, you know, I read UFOs and my first thought goes to, you know, flying saucers, spooky music.
X-Files stuff.
Exactly. And I think it sounds fun, but maybe not one for me, right? I was a little bit skeptical about it. But after looking into it, doing some research, speaking with some people, I became completely fascinated by this. And I go from thinking that this would be, you know, maybe a bit of a niche subject for the graphic detail section, to realizing that this is a conversation about science, about defense, but also about mistrust in government and politics, about psychology and polarization and conspiracy theories. You know, they may be a part of that conversation, but it's also about things that are much more tangible than that.
And what is it about this story that changed your mind in that way? Or is it just that you hadn't thought about it that much before?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not the Economist UFO correspondent. We don't have a UFO correspondent, and it's not something that had been front of mind for me before. But when you read the reports and you speak to people, you realize that it's actually quite a rational conversation to be having, right?
Well, go on. How does this go from tinfoil hat stuff to quite a rational conversation?
So the first step was that I talked to the CEO of Enigma Labs. They were the company that had reached out to us. And Enigma Labs, they've been around for a couple of years now. They're funded by startup investors, and they're basically a tech company that's building a tool to map UFO sightings. They're embedding known data sources into their app, so things that we can already verify that's in the sky. So, you know, flight trackers, satellite, stars, and so on. The CEO describes them as like a Shazam for the skies. So if you hear a song when you're down at the pub, you can Shazam it through your app and it will tell you within seconds what song it is. This is kind of similar. So you point your camera towards the sky and the app will say, oh, you know, that's a British Airways flight on its way to London or whatever. Or if it's not a straightforward case, it can be uploaded into their database of UFOs. In a nutshell, it's basically trying to make sense and systematically analyze all the clutter that's in our skies.
And you say you met the CEO. Tell me about them.
So that's a harder question to answer than you might think. So basically, we don't know a lot about her, right? Well, we do, but it's not public information. The CEO is anonymous. We're not even using her real voice in this podcast. We've totally changed her voice using an AI filter, and we're not going to name her either. But she says she spotted a gap in the market where there's a lot of demand from people, from civilians, wanting to understand what they're seeing, and governments, I'm sure, wanting to understand what civilians are seeing, but no real way of tracking that globally. So that's how Enigma Labs came to be.
Good old-fashioned Silicon Valley startup type thing, seeing a gap in the market. It just happens to have to do with UFOs this time around.
Exactly.
And what about the rest of the company? How big is this? What are the kinds of people who work there? Is it all tech folk?
Yeah, so that was a key question for me, right? Is this a group of alien hunter conspiracy theorists and this is just sort of like a hobby? Or is it a more sophisticated operation than that? And it turns out it's a pretty sophisticated operation.
We're a full-time group of very diverse professionals that have no background in this topic. We come from a very diverse set of backgrounds from tech companies, as well as some service. We have some folks who've served in the past, but companies we come from include, you know, Dropbox and Google and Apple and Snapchat. And we have folks who've worked on products such as Instagram and Foursquare, Mapbox. All of these have mapping components of it. And we do a lot of geospatial in what we're doing. Also people who've come from building communities or companies like Clubhouse.
I mean, it sounds like kind of an all-star tech team that's been assembled here. How is it that they've all come to want to work on this, may I call it a niche question?
So I spoke to some people who work there, and their main message was that they are rational problem solvers. They said they want to go wherever the data leads them, and they see this as a data-driven exercise aimed at answering questions that have existed, you know, for decades in various countries, not just America, but Belgium and Europe and so on. So they're looking at answering what are these UFOs that people are seeing.
So is the starting premise for a lot of these people that essentially they're looking for the rational explanation that they know is already there? It's just a matter of getting the right tech tools to identify whatever the thing actually is, the weather balloon or whatever.
Potentially. So obviously they'll come at it from different angles, but I think the overall message was that they want to use the known data sources so that they can maybe for the first time perhaps split the known unknowns from the unknown unknowns.
Okay, well then let's be clear about what the unknown unknowns are, because that phrase is going to keep getting used, isn't it? What is a UFO? What's left when everything else has been ticked off?
Yeah, so UFOs, unidentified flying objects, now referred to in some circles as UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. They're basically the same thing. They are the same thing. They're things that don't obviously make sense. So the way they move, the way they look, it's not obvious what they are.
So we are looking for things that don't have known methods of propulsion. That's one criteria. So our known methods of propulsion include wings,
rotors, exhaust jets. I suppose balloons would be another sort of known tend to float, but it would be helium-based, potentially some engine. So there's a sort of known methods of propulsion. If an object is moving without those mechanistic features, then it would be an unknown. Flight patterns that are unusual, generally things that are straight and steady, are not unusual. Things that move erratically, very fast, so it can move multiple Gs in different directions, can go between space, air, and water, can hold fixed in prevailing winds, is very unusual.
So what she's saying there is actually consistent with the sorts of things you hear in other UFO reports and other places, things that just move in unphysical ways. People are reporting stuff that, I guess, couldn't possibly be human technology.
Yeah, but before we dust off our tinfoil hats, let's remember that there are often worldly explanations rather than otherworldly explanations for what people are seeing, right? And some of it might be classified military operations that just because we don't know about them doesn't mean that they're not made by any human.
Okay, I get the purpose then of the app. It is to identify the things that, well, that are not unidentified, I guess. But what about the user end of it? Who's using this app?
Our very core constituent, if you will, are people who see things in the sky. That's the core to what we do. Actually, if you look at the Gallup polling and the Nat Geo polling, 1 in 4 Americans has seen something in the sky they couldn't identify.
She said 1 in 4 there. The Gallup poll that I'm looking at now says something more like 1 in 6, 1 in 7. Either way, these are numbers higher than you'd expect for people saying they've seen a UFO.
Right. And I mean, I guess that sounds quite surprising, but also, you know, that's not to say that 1 in 4 people saw something that can't actually be explained, right? So I woke up in the middle of the night the other night, looked out the window, and I was convinced that I was seeing this like little ball that was, you know, the more I stared at it, the more it looked like it was moving, it looked like it was flashing. And I used this astronomy app, and it turned out that my UFO was just a star, right? It was just a really boring story, nothing exciting. And what I realized was that the, you know, the flickering and the movements was, I guess, just an optical illusion, and it ended up being quite a boring story. But once upon a time, you know, that could have been my UFO story, right? The one that I tell pollsters about, the one that I tell my grandkids about. And that was something, you know, me witnessing something unusual. But now, because we have ways of analyzing these things, it's just a pretty lame story. And normalizing the conversation about UFOs and increasing the amount of research that goes into them, that doesn't necessarily mean that these sightings will lead to anything all that exciting. But it will help differentiate, again, the truly unidentifiable objects. And people have seen things that are a little bit more exciting than what I saw. And that's probably just a minority from the stuff that's just a case of mistaken identity, like my star.
We expect that number to go up and up and up as our skies become more crowded with new sorts of technology and AI accelerates. It's going to be very busy. You know, there'll be more and more drones, there'll be more and more eVTOLs, rocket launches, things coming back down from LEO and from orbit, and making sure that people understand what's normal, what's not normal, as we go into sort of an aerial age is important. So our core user and core focus is witnesses, people who are seeing things in the sky and reporting them.
Okay, only a couple of things I didn't understand in there. eVTOLs and who's LEO?
So LEO, low Earth orbit, eVTOLs, you're basically talking about things like air taxis. So yeah, the point is that, you know, our skies are becoming incredibly cluttered with a lot of stuff, for lack of a better word. And we also have access, most of us have access to pretty good cameras in our pocket, right? So the point is that we're going to be recording a lot more of these things that are in the sky that we can't make sense of, but a lot of them will have just kind of boring explanations. You know, like, have you ever seen the footage of a Starlink satellite, Jason?
Yes.
Yeah, so they look like little ants, right, in the sky. Now, if you saw that and you didn't know what it was, yeah, I would totally get
aliens.
My phone out and record it. Yeah, well, that would be one theory. And yeah, so that's basically the point of this, right, is that there's going to be a lot of strange sightings. A lot of it can be explained. People record them. They then upload them to different platforms and they get told, okay, that's, Elon Musk, or that's, you know, whatever it may be.
So far, so rational, to use a word you used earlier. This all seems like, a very sensible way of going about answering this question and identifying what really is unidentified, I guess. So one question, maybe a little late in the game, why does our CEO here want to be anonymous?
Yeah, so remember I said that I was looped in on this email with our science editor in the beginning, and he said, you know, this might be something that would interest you for graphic detail. And I said, okay, I'll reach out to the CEO separately. You know, what's their name? And Alok, our science editor, he responded with, good question, they're anonymous. And I wasn't really sure what to make of that, right? I've not dealt with many anonymous CEOs before, and it makes it harder to easily check their credentials, right? Which is important. But what I realized from talking to people in this field is that they face a lot of harassment, like way more than I was expecting.
I think there's a lot of intense opinions on this topic from all different directions, people who you think we're saving the world, and people who think that what we're, people who maybe think the opposite of that, people who are scared at this topic or bar we learn. Just a lot of interesting people with interesting opinions. And I think that people who've worked in this field have had a history of being harassed. If you look at the NASA panel most recently, independent panel of scientists that we presented to, actually, some of those independent scientists on that panel started to get harassed just because of their involvement with this topic.
What does harassment even look like in this context?
Yeah, so even NASA, when they announced that they're appointing a UAP director, a director for UAP research, initially they didn't even name the new director because they were so worried about harassment. And from the people that we've spoken to, you know, it might take different forms, but it might be harassment from the media, right? People like us wanting to interview them at all hours of the day. It can also be your sort of people that are very entrenched in their camps, whether they believe or don't believe that there's a sort of conspiracy angle to this.
But why do you think this topic excites such strong opinions and even harassment?
So a lot of people, myself included, grew up watching things like Men in Black.
We work for a highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
And Independence Day.
Radio signal from another world.
And aliens have been a subject of science fiction for decades. Some of it really good science fiction.
E.T.
But pop culture has definitely sort of conflated UFOs and aliens, especially in America. I mean, this podcast is really about making sense of what's in the sky, right? But we've spent already a big chunk of it talking about little green men and joking about tinfoil hats.
God, I hope they bring back Elvis!
And part of the problem for the people who want to have a more rational and science-based conversation about it is that people like you and me, Jason, keep bringing it back to aliens. But really, the ultimate goal here is to create a space for real and non-sensational tracking of this phenomena, right? That's what Enigma say they want to do.
I think it's a very big dream what we're doing. It's a huge mystery. And I do think culturally, this is a really important time as well for what we're doing. It's really in the zeitgeist. It's in the water. I think we're living in a uncertain time. And I do think that the Overton window, so to speak, has shifted from what people think is possible.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm interested in that notion there that A says this is a culturally an important time. What do you think she means by that?
Yeah, so the conversation has sobered up a bit recently, right? Do you remember, for example, the Chinese balloon incident last year?
Yep, we covered that.
Yeah, so in 2023, there were these balloon sightings.
I have no idea what this thing is.
These were huge balloons.
A strange object in the sky, filmed by a member of the public in rural Montana.
And no one really knew what to do with them, right? They were in US airspace. Donald Trump said, shoot down the balloon in all caps on social media. Military commanders were apparently concerned that popping the balloons could harm civilians on the ground, right, from falling debris. And China quickly insisted that these were just innocent weather monitoring balloons that had strayed into these airspaces. But the Pentagon called them surveillance balloons, right? That they had the potential to track more sensitive information than the weather. And it later turned out that this wasn't even the first time that this had happened. They later figured out that these things had been around before, but they hadn't been properly detected at the time. So now, you know, you may be thinking that why are we talking about this US-China relations story from last year? But this is exactly what we're talking about, right? These balloons were objects in the sky that we didn't immediately know what they were. We didn't know to what extent they were an issue for national security. And for a lot of people, this incident represented an example of how even a military as big as America's isn't properly equipped with ways to spot and analyze or assess rogue phenomena that drifts into its airspace.
Yeah, it was a huge moment. There was actually four objects shot down between January 28th and February 12th of 2023. And the US defense forces are very good at what they're good at. And they're very good at keeping us safe from ballistic missiles. And if it's not that, if it's something that falls outside of those parameters, if those are things that we struggle here in the US and other countries to detect, they fall through the cracks. And so that balloon was more of a public watershed moment in that it came to the public mind that actually a lot of things are falling through the cracks and have just been filtered out because it's very hard to deal with these smaller size unusual objects. But it's pretty wild to be scrambling, you know, F-22s and F-16 for using Sidewinder missiles to shoot down, in some cases, what could be science balloons, you know, sent up by kids, or they could be foreign state balloons. But there's so much going on in our airspace. We need a better way to figure out what's going on than scrambling fighter jets each time, because it's a lot.
Yeah, so as you heard there, right, aliens could pose a pretty big national security threat, but there's also threats much closer to home, right? And conflating the two and adding the alien baggage to the topic of UFOs has sort of trivialized for many people quite an important security issue here.
This topic, of course, is tied to a very long cultural history, particularly in the US, but we remain agnostic as to whether UAP are little ring men. It may be, it may not be. It might be just a mix of different things. You know, it probably isn't just one answer. That's the more data we get, the more we think there's several things going on. There's different types of behavior, different types of objects appearing that may fit not such a simple answer. You know, for me personally, I'm always driven by intellectual curiosity and I'm always interested in gaps in the market. Is there demand for something and there's a lack of supply of it? And that's what I saw here. There's so much demand for information on the topic of UAP, both from the public, but now increasingly from the defense world, from the Navy pilots. They want answers. And now, finally, from Congress.
Based on your experience and extensive conversations with experts, do you believe our government has made contact with intelligent extraterrestrials?
Something I can't discuss in public setting.
So hang on here. When did Congress become part of this discussion?
Yeah, so much like everyone else, Congress has also conflated the topic of aliens on the one hand and UFOs drifting into US airspace on the other, which some people that I spoke to told me they found quite disappointing. So last year, you had a former Air Force intelligence officer testify saying that the US had been aware of non-human activity and technology going back decades.
Okay, I can't ask when you think this occurred. If you believe we have crashed craft, stated earlier, do we have the bodies of the pilots who piloted this craft?
As I've stated publicly already in my News Nation interview, biologics came with some of these recoveries, yeah.
Were they, I guess, human or non-human biologics?
Non-human, and that was the assessment of people with direct knowledge on the program I talked to that are currently still on the program.
And was this documentary evidence, video, photos?
So quite an explosive testimony, right?
Yes, this is not the sobering stuff you'd want to hear in that forum.
Exactly. And I should say as well, you know, the Pentagon denies those claims and subsequent reports from the Pentagon didn't find evidence of a cover-up or evidence of extraterrestrials. But at the same testimony, you had two other U.S. military veterans, right? And their focus was less on the little green men and more on ways to improve data gathering and analysis of things in U.S. airspace. So they recounted incidents where they witnessed flying objects while serving in the military that they said seemed far more advanced and more sophisticated than anything that the U.S. military is currently capable of.
During a training mission in Warning Area Whiskey 72, 10 miles off the coast of Virginia Beach, two F-18 Super Hornets were split by a UAP. The object, described as a dark gray or a black cube inside of a clear sphere, came within 50 feet of the lead aircraft and was estimated to be 5 to 15 feet in diameter. The mission commander terminated the flight immediately and returned to base. Our squadron submitted a safety report, but there was no official acknowledgement of the incident and no further mechanism to report the sightings. Soon, these encounters became so frequent that aircrew would discuss the risk of UAP as part of their regular pre-flight briefs.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the SA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. The whole thing, dude.
So, Michelle, what is it that we're hearing here?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they don't know, right? So we don't know either. But this is a clip from the Navy. The Navy released some of the footage captured by pilots, and it shows their reaction as they're seeing, you know, a UFO, literally an unidentified flying object. And again, I sort of keep coming back to this point, but just to be absolutely sure, we're not telling listeners that this is, you know, an example of aliens making contact, but this could be any number of things. And the Navy didn't release this as like an example of, you know, something incredibly cool. This, I think, is part of the Navy and the Pentagon and the government's attempt to take the sting out of some of this conversation, right? To normalize this as part of due process, as opposed to adding fuel to the conspiracy fire that there's a government cover-up and that they're trying to hide things from the public.
But don't these kinds of disclosures kind of undo the purported good work of Enigma? It presents even expert pilots saying, I don't know what this is, suggesting that there's something out there that no one knows what it is?
No, I mean, Enigma, they don't deny that there's things out there that you can't explain, right? And if anything, part of their work is to separate the things that can be easily explained from things like we just heard, where, you know, people who are trained to pick up on unusual things in airspace are saying, you know, we have no idea what this is. Now, it might be that these sightings do have an ordinary explanation, right? There was subsequent analysis on some of the Navy clips that claimed that what the pilots were seeing, you know, it looked like this object was moving unbelievably fast, but that was more because they themselves were traveling so unbelievably fast that it was sort of an illusion, right? But what Congress and NASA and other agencies want is more hard data to be able to assess these things, regardless of whether it ends up with a very simple solution or whether it ends up with a slightly more extraordinary solution.
Moving this stuff from the realm of science fiction then to actual science.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what NASA said recently, in fact.
We, NASA, are trying to shift it from sensationalism to science.
They've now appointed a director of UAP research, and they're hungry for more data that can be systematically analyzed.
So if that in turn is dependent on the crowdsourcing, how does the crowdsourcing work?
Yeah, so on the civilian side, you'd have platforms like what Enigma are working on, right? So that collect all this information that can later be analyzed by various groups. But even Enigma find that a lot of their submissions from the public come from either current or former members of the armed forces. And I guess that makes sense, right? These are people who are responsible for monitoring and assessing things that they see. And there's actually a strong military cohort engaged in this space.
For me, when I say I saw a UFO on November 14th, 2004, I mean literally I saw an unidentified flying object. And I am not suggesting that I saw aliens, that I saw something from another dimension, that I saw some other thing. And it would be really irresponsible of me to speculate about what I saw, because I'm not qualified to make that analysis. I saw something strange while I was flying a military aircraft off the coast of California.
So Alex Dietrich is a former fighter pilot who had this sighting experience in 2004. And this is how she described what happened that day.
So we're all looking outside, and someone from among the four of us shouts, "Hey, look in the water. Do you see that in the water?" And I look down and there's something churning in the water. And so my heart sank, thinking that whatever, you know, whoever we had been chasing has crashed and is sinking. But that was just a split second of emotion before this UFO enters the picture. And I don't know whether it was related to what was in the water or what was causing the water to churn, but the water disturbance is what allowed me to get a visual tally on this UFO, which we affectionately refer to as the Tic Tac, because it looked like the small white breath mint Tic Tac, but much larger. So we estimate that it was about 40 feet in length, so about the size of our fuselage. And it didn't have any flight control surfaces. It didn't have wings or ailerons or rudders or things that we use to maneuver. It didn't have any apparent means of propulsion. When we came back to the ship and we debriefed, trying to figure out, you know, what was that? What could it have been? Who could have been behind it? You know, there was just a collective question mark.
So, a pretty strange experience, right, Jason?
I mean, clearly, but she seems to be quite, to use this word again, rational about it.
Yeah, exactly. And to sort of emphasize the point, she said, you know, that she doesn't identify as a UFO person and she's very neutral on her experience. And she ultimately just states that she saw an object while flying in a taxpayer-funded plane and she wants to raise awareness for that. And, you know, Alex's sighting was from 20 years ago and it's still being brought up in Congress. And there's all these different strands, therefore, that are coming together, right? You've got the military soldiers testifying that they saw things that they still can't explain. And you have other UFOs that in the end became identified as what I was calling Chinese surveillance balloons. So all of those things coming together is basically creating a new era in the topic of UFOs.
So it was a watershed for us in terms of, yeah, you know, we blew up. We had a lot of submissions coming in. It was before we had launched our mobile app, which launched a few months later. So we were taking in submissions by web and obviously got a lot of inbound from folks who needed help with more aerial awareness. And more recently, there have been cases like that that we've been very actively aware of and involved in, and people are sending all sorts of reports to us about, you know, unidentified aerial activity. There's one that I can speak about now because it actually ended up, I think, getting leaked into the public domain earlier this year. But there was a wave of unidentified aerial activity over Langley Air Force Base in Virginia in December. And press, I think, came out about this later on. But we happened to receive 12 submissions in that area, in that time, from our users. We have quite a few users in that area saying they were seeing unidentified objects. It's still unknown, you know, the point of origin of those objects or what they were.
So does Enigma have a good sense for what's going on, at least in that case?
No, and I mean, that's the point, right, is that they're unidentified, they're UFOs, and they want to collect data like this, but not necessarily come up with theories. But we did ask if not the obvious and if not aliens, where does that leave us?
I think there's lots of potential explanations that are not little green men. Steven Spielberg voiced one recently, but I thought was quite charming in a Steven Spielberg way, which was, us from the future. And maybe we've sent back video cameras to record this moment because it's interesting. Maybe it's because this is the moment where the birth of AI is starting. So maybe AI is interested in this moment for some reason. I have a very well-known founder of a big tech company who knows a lot about cutting-edge tech said to me, oh, it's definitely coming from the Bourne radiations, you know. And a very well-known sci-fi author said to me that he thinks it could be ancient civilizations left their technology in the bottom of the oceans. There's some people who comment on the ephemeral nature of these and why their hearts pinned down. And is there some dimensionality involved, something about going between dimensions, right? Perhaps it's some weird weather phenomenon that's quantum, that's going between dimensions, that also has a scientific explanation. I think there's lots of, all of those are very interesting to me, as interesting, if not more than, you know, the Little Green Man.
So what's funny in that is that little green men get sort of brushed off, but time-traveling AIs and dimension-hopping with quantum characteristics does not, right? It's this affirmation of the notion that if you take this seriously, even with technological tools and an open mind, you're still going to get some loopy explanation, some people who have perhaps some crazy ideas.
Right, and this goes back to the conversation about science fiction and conspiracy theories, right? It's sort of that human need to make sense of things in different ways. And if we don't have an answer, sort of coming up with quite fantastical things.
So let's wind back to the beginning here. You said this kind of came unbidden to your desk. You've now met some of the players in this space. You've heard some of these stories. You see where these initiatives are going. How has it changed the way you think about this?
So this is a horrible generalization, right? But bear with me. You've kind of got three broad categories of UFO people. You've got your diehard alien hunters. Let's call them the believers. They think that something is out there, that these UFOs are proof that aliens have made contact, that there's a big government cover-up, etc. Then at the very other end of the spectrum, you have your hardcore deniers, right? Let's call them the debunkers. They devote a lot of time to looking back through sightings of unidentifiable objects and coming up with explanations for them, whether it's a cloud or a bird or a commercial jet. And these two groups have existed for a long time, right? This is nothing new. That conversation, you know, are we alone? No or yes, that conversation has been around for a long time. But finally, you have what seems to me to be a growing number of agnostics in the middle. So people who accept that some unidentified objects really are unidentifiable. They can't be explained categorically, and we don't currently have a satisfying answer for them. They don't necessarily believe or deny the existence of aliens, and they don't think the issue of UFOs in our airspace necessarily even needs to be conflated with alien conspiracy theories. And I think that's the part that we're talking about when we're talking about UFOs going mainstream, right? It's the U in UFO. It's the unidentified part, the accepting that we need better and easier ways of being able to identify these easily identifiable things and having a proper system for rationally analyzing the harder to identify things.
Or at least being at peace with the idea that things are going to be unidentifiable without necessarily assigning them a, you know, little green body.
Exactly. Not trying to fill in the gaps with various theories, right? And that's something that Alex, the former fighter pilot that we spoke to, stressed, that when we're searching for these answers, to go at it with a level head.
You know, people see strange things and they should call and report them, and we should investigate them and follow through. And hopefully there's a benign explanation. But if there isn't, wouldn't we like to know? If it's an adversary in our airspace, wouldn't we like to know if it is extraterrestrial non-human intelligence? Wouldn't we like to know if it's some natural phenomenon that we're just not advanced enough in our sensors to capture or understand at this point? I think it would be really arrogant of us to assume that we've figured everything out. I mean, I think that's the definition of hubris.
Michelle, thanks very much for all of your time for a rational discourse.
Rational indeed. Thank you.
And you out there in whatever space-time continuum you're tuning in from, thank you for listening. Today's episode was reported by Michelle Hennessy and produced by Sam Westren. Our executive producer is Gemma Newby, and our sound designer is Nico Raufast. We'll see you back here on Monday.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.